Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Live Line. By the way, in our discussion over the last week or so with the families of our soldiers in Lebanon, who've contacted us day in, day out. Well, the latest statement, as you know, from Army HQ is that all are safe and well, and we have, that's what we go by. But a number of our callers mentioned the cost of our soldiers' mobile phone calls when they ring home. And we got onto AIR, which is obviously a big company. And in fairness to AIR, they've come back to us saying, we are open to having that conversation, i.e. if special rates are indeed bill cancelled, their words. We have not been contacted by the Irish Defence Forces to discuss special rates or bill cancellations for our Irish soldiers, but we are open to having that conversation. So if you're on an AIR account out in Lebanon, AIR are saying quite categorically, we will discuss special rates or indeed bill cancellations for our Irish soldiers. Well, that's a little bit of good news. A little bit of good news. And I presume Three and Sky Mobile now, Vodafone, I presume the other, there's only 360 of our soldiers out there. I presume the other companies will come on board and say, yeah, given the circumstances that we're now in, we will not charge our soldiers for calls home. By the way, it's at least €3 a minute when you do call home, at least, and that's on a prepay. So AIR are being very upfront, saying we are open to having a conversation about bill cancellations once they obviously get an official call from Defence Force HQ. The second thing I mentioned, you know, the pouches, the Norma Foley pouches have been mentioned time in, time out since the afternoon of the budget. All we're getting is suggestions on how to get round the pouches. For example, one student can just buy a fake phone or an old phone and put that in the pouch. Keep your own phone on you. See, young people will find ways. Carefully slice the bottom of the pouch open and use Velcro to give the illusion that it's secure at the bottom. These are geniuses. These are young scientists in the making. Get a strong neodymium magnet, about 3/4 of an inch diameter by 3/4 of an inch long. Try that at various angles on the end. I don't think normal magnets are strong enough. You need these neodymium magnets. Three ways, another suggestion. Shove a pen under the lock and leave some of the pen sticking out the side. Then slap the pen. I don't think you're going to do this in front of the teacher. Then slap the pen on a desk edge and that should pop it open. The next one, a fishing magnet. The fishing magnet needs 180 pounds pulling force, and use that like you would, you're unlocking the base. I mean, it is unlocked by it, but that magnet should do it. Another way, another suggestion is that one student has seen but destroys the pouch is to take a pair of car keys, find the seam under the lock, i.e. the stitching. Then run the keys across it a few times to slice a hole in it. You could also bend the pin. And apparently that's one way to ensure that it will not lock again. The other suggestion is the teacher who said she bought a stack of popcorn bags. You know, the ones you see in the small popcorn bags, about the size of a mobile phone. She put some unsalted popcorn into the bag. Every student has to drop their phone into the popcorn bag. She goes around and staples every bag. And if anyone tries to open the bag, will make an unholy noise and cost the state nothing. Caroline Taylor. Caroline.
Hello, Joe. Hello.
Caroline, just remind people, you were walking, how long ago was it now? September? What date
it was?
Last Tuesday. No, you were on with us last Tuesday, but when did you lose the keys?
Yeah, so oh gosh, what date was it now? Not last Tuesday, week before. Yeah. The week before. So I was walking on the Carramore Beach in Lewisburg, with my husband.
Yeah.
And I slipped on a small rock.
Yeah, lost your keys.
Lost my keys.
And then you contacted your son in England, please send over the keys. And then there was, because of Brexit, the keys were didn't have the proper customs declaration, and they were impounded in the Dublin Mail Centre, and you made a plea to try and please release me keys, and they bent over backwards and behind Ursula von der Leyen's back they actually found in the millions and millions of pieces they found your envelope. Have you now got that key in your hand?
I have. I'm so delighted. Well, describe, I'm the happiest woman.
Well, come on, describe the feeling.
This morning, we were waiting in the living room for the postman to arrive.
Yeah.
Because the lovely Jennifer Darcy from Ampost phoned me this morning and said she's going to be tracking the package. And she said the postman would arrive about 11:30. So the four of us were waiting in the living room, looking out the window, waiting for him.
Okay.
And then he pulled up and he knocked the door and he goes, "Are these the famous keys?" And then we virtually jumped on him. We were laughing and all hugging each other and laughing and joking. And it was just so, so emotional. I was so overwhelmed. We took pictures with the postman and we all had a great laugh about it.
Okay, Mike. And had he any other posts to deliver?
He did. He had a few more letters, but with all the excitement, he totally forgot to deliver the other letters.
Okay.
And he had to come back with
so
the
you opened
letters.
The envelope a couple of hours ago. You now have the key. Have you made your way? Remember, the car, listeners, the car is not outside Caroline's house. The car is where she left it. Can you tell us now where we didn't want to give the exact details. Where exactly did you park your car?
We parked the car on Caramore Beach 10 days ago. And the car was left open because I had to get a locksmith over to get my bag out of the boot.
Yeah,
because it had my passports in there and purse and everything. So he came over, opened the boot, I got the bag out, and the car's been left open all that time. And a testimony to the local area that the car has not been touched. Everything is inside the car, you know, and it's in perfect 100% condition. No one's touched it.
Okay, but we don't know whether it's going to start or not.
Testimony.
And the guards actually came along, saw the car, and in fairness, they made their own inquiries and contacted you to see were you okay.
They did.
Where would
and
you
I
get
want
it?
To thank that guard.
Where
he
would
wouldn't
you get
that
it?
Nowhere else.
That's
he
fantastic.
Get that nowhere
and
else,
those Gardaí, were they? Do we know where they're from, Caroline? Are they from Lewisburg?
They're from Westport.
Westport.
They're from either Westport or Lewisburg. I'm not sure.
Okay, brilliant.
When
he
called me, I couldn't get his name, but I want to thank him so much.
Okay, and we will write to the chief super in that area on your behalf to say thank you and well done. Okay, the key is in your hand.
It is in my hand. Yes.
Okay. What does it feel like?
Oh, it feels amazing. Honestly, you've got no idea. I am so, so happy.
Okay.
The release is immense.
Okay.
I feel like all the stress is washed away from me.
Okay. Who's there with you, Caroline?
My lovely husband, Keith.
Okay. And if the car starts, who will you be saying goodbye to as you head back down across the country?
I'll be very sad to say goodbye to my lovely cousin Francis and Bernadette.
Okay. Because they've been so good to you.
Francis O'Grady and Bernadette O'Grady, they've been fantastic.
Because you did overstay your welcome. No, sorry, you did overstay the plans. I'm sure you're very welcome.
I did overstay, but they made us feel very, very welcome.
Okay.
And nothing was too much trouble for them. And we couldn't have better family.
Okay, so if the car starts, you're going to drive to Dublin, get on the ferry back to England. And when do you hope to be back in Coventry if the car starts?
If the car starts, we're planning to be back on Monday evening.
Okay.
We'll be back in Coventry Monday evening.
You should be back for Christmas anyway, is that right? Okay, Caroline. But do you want to get into the car?
Yeah, I'll get into the car then.
Okay.
Hang on.
Now take your time. There's the ticking clock.
Yeah.
Take your time. We'll do a countdown. Stay with me, Caroline.
Okay. All right. Countdown.
10. No,
nine.
Have you put the key into the ignition?
Yeah, we put the key in.
Okay.
Yeah,
10. 9. 8. 7. 6. 5. 4. 3. 2. 1. Ignite.
liftoff.
Oh, quick. We have liftoff.
We have
liftoff. Let's hear the sound of that car.
Good on, baby.
Rev it up.
Yeah, that sounds
very good. Yes. Rev it again for me. Don't destroy it. And it's a Mercedes SLK, and it's diesel.
It is diesel, yes.
And have you much diesel in it?
No, we've got about a quarter, so we need to go down and fill up now.
And what colour is the car?
It's a white one, a white one.
White one, okay. And is it a five-door, two-door?
It's a two-door,
Okay.
Two-door,
what? Oh, lovely. That's a very distinctive car. Two-door flat, flat top?
It's a soft top.
Oh, lovely.
So you can take the top off.
Wow.
When it's nice weather.
Now that the car turned the ignition again, just double check.
Do it again, quick. Yeah, it's going. It's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, my nerves are gone here.
When
will you leave Lewisburg?
We'll be leaving Lewisburg Monday morning.
Okay.
And heading on to Dublin.
And Dublin. And what time do you hope to get onto the ferry at Caroline?
About 2:45.
You'll be leaving Lewisburg at 8 in the morning, will you?
Probably about 8 o'clock in the morning.
And then your route is where? Down through Longford?
That's the way we would head. Yeah.
Well done.
On Holyhead, and then on to Coventry.
Okay, I just want people to watch out for the car and give you a wave.
Yeah, give us a wave. That would be lovely.
It's a white Mercedes Sports SLK. It's a soft top. Don't give me the reg number. Give me the first three letters of your reg. It's a UK reg.
E7K.
Okay. Yeah, if you see on Monday morning, and even if you see it over the next few days around Lewisburg, if you see a white Mercedes SLK, it is and the first three digits stroke letters on the reg number, yellow reg, obviously, is E7K.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the main identifier, the main moniker will be that there will be two very happy people in the car.
With big smiles like Cheshire cats.
Okay. And you're not tempted, yourself and your husband, Caroline, to put tin cans at the back of it to try and draw more attention to yourself?
No, we're not tempted to do that.
Okay.
So I'm
trying to think of what song we'll send you off. Oh, here we go. And remember, Carla.
That's perfect.
If you take the M50, you should be home for Christmas. Especially if it's at rush hour in Dublin. Chris Ree is leaving now if he's on the M50 to get home for Christmas. Are you ready?
Thank you.
In the car, start the engine again.
Start the engine.
Great.
There we go.
Take your time. Safe home, Caroline. Oh, Caroline. We'll dip Chris just for a sec. We'll still hear him in the background. Caroline, the Flynn Hotel Group, they have hotels in Clare, in the south of the country. They want to offer you accommodation, so a night away with them. So we'll send you that voucher as well. Okay.
Oh my God, that's so nice.
The only thing the Flynn Hotel Group have said is, if Caroline is coming to stay in one of our hotels, will she make sure she brings a spare set of keys?
I'm walking travel with two keys, that's nice.
Bye. Where's the guards?
To Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, Norma Foley's pouches I mentioned earlier, people phoning in. We shouldn't do this. This is so wrong. It feels so wrong. But young people are going to find a way in and out of those pouches. David, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
How are you?
I'm not too bad. I'm a bit nervous, Joe.
Hi. Do you agree with me that young people, you would know more than most, young people, when it comes to these pouches, are going to be extraordinarily young, scientifically inventive?
Yeah, but, you know, it's quite easy. The pouches, my main point when I emailed in, the main point about the pouches is that they're substandard, you know. It wouldn't, they don't last.
Yeah.
And the main point is about, you know, Norma Foley was going to spend $9 million, a once-off payment. It will continue, but it'll continue because they don't last. They last maybe, some last a day, some last a week. Now, the very, very good lad might get 3 months, but they don't last.
And have you got experience with them?
Yeah, I'm a teacher in the west of Ireland. I'd rather not say where.
Yeah.
And our pouches have been in the schools since last September.
Okay.
And look at it, it has improved a lot. It has improved. As we all know, the phones are a total disaster. But that's my part of my job is to, I suppose, the rule of law about looking after the phones in the school, and it has become a nightmare because, the pouches don't do what they're supposed to do, and then to get them to put them into their pouches. And my school isn't a massive school. I'm just wondering about schools in Dublin and Limerick
What are they doing? What are they doing to get a... They're all instructed you have to put your phone into the pouch, you leave the pouch on your desk. What are they doing?
Yeah. Well, no, junior students are told to put it in their locker, and senior students can put it in their bag.
Okay.
Some do, some don't, but as you mentioned earlier there, the dummy phone is a big one.
Okay.
So you put a dummy phone in the pouch.
Okay.
And what I've started to do is I've actually started to look at lads as they put the phone in the pouch because they're repeat offenders.
Okay.
I have to actually see them put their phone, and I actually know their phone now because I've seen it so many times. You know, and then the pin doesn't, you know, it doesn't last.
Explain the pin for those of us.
Yeah, well, if you've ever seen the pouch, the pin that actually locks the pouch is about the width of a needle for sewing.
Okay.
So, as you can imagine, they're not very strong or very durable. And once they bend, actually talking to my engineering teacher today, and he's actually overran with lead to get it straightened. But once you straighten it, it's never the same. And
it can be opened.
Yeah, but it can be open, but they're very easy to break if they are open before you put in your phone.
Look at an average year. What percentage of the pouches would be in unusable by the end of the year?
Well, you know, Yonder might be able to answer that question, the pouch itself, the makers, because I would say our school is about 400, so I don't know exactly, but I'd say possibly 100 or 150 new pouches had to be got. And if you remember, Joe, if the students are paying for the pouch, they might have some respect for the pouch. But if the school is the owner of the pouch, they're not going to.
So you say in a school year, an average between a quarter and one third of the pouches are bite to dust.
I would say anywhere like that. And I'm just trying to help out the Minister for Education because it's actually going to be a total waste of money.
Okay.
And I would love to be able to make a better pouch, but I'm not technically minded and I would, you know.
Did you see the teacher online? I saw her the other night. She gets the popcorn bags. I mentioned this earlier. She gets the slim popcorn bags. You can buy thousands of them in one go on K&M, Evans or any supplier. You put a few, you don't actually have to, but if you put a few, obviously it's you'd have a pot of unsalted, untouched popcorn at your desk. You put a few corns into the bag. You then staple the top of the bag and you leave it on your desk. And if anyone tries to open the bag, it'll make a lot of noise.
Yeah, it's a lot easier than €20.
Less than a cent a bag.
Oh, yeah.
Less than a cent a bag. And by the way, people say, You can only use a bag once. No, you can't. You can use it five or six. You get a week out of it. You put one staple in on the Monday. Obviously, you open it and you take your phone out. Come in the next day, new staple across the top again. You'll get at least five staples. Now, David, who polices this? You do, do you?
Well, this is it, yeah. Well, yeah, mainly. Now, all teachers are fairly well bought into it, you know, that all teachers keep an eye on it. But, you know, the lad then, there's a lot of the lads, you say, well, you know, have your phone, show me your pouch, and they say, oh, I didn't bring my phone today. So you can imagine the nightmare, and then you meet him.
And you can't see, you can't search.
Well, I don't know. If you can see, you can search. You okay, know, I have, well, I what's, have come what, on.
Okay, and what's happened? What's happened when you see and you searched?
I take the phone off them, usually. Now, you do get some lads that cannot live without the phone and they won't give up the phone, so that goes to another level.
Okay.
That's beyond me, but, you know, you try your best to do it amicably and they hand up their phone.
But say you say to a young fella, are you mixed school or just...
No, it's all boys, actually.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, but it's probably more difficult even in a mixed school. Can a male teacher say to a female student, what's that in your pocket? Let me take it out of your pocket.
I would have to say, Joe, can a male teacher say it to a male student? Don't know. You know, I don't know. And then...
And is it always, you know, when you see something protruding in the pocket, is it always a mobile phone?
I try to be as sure as I can before I make the move. But, you know, but yeah, one or two have tried the calculator and just to...
To annoy you.
You know, well, possibly. I can't say that, Joe, but possibly.
Okay.
You know. So it's a nightmare to police. But my main point about it was the pouch. It does not do...
Yeah, well, Yonder, we have a statement from Yonder saying the pouch is not indestructible. They never said it was. Did they ever make a penny if they lasted a lifetime? The pouches are not indestructible.
Yes.
By any stretch. Yes. Okay, stay with us, David. Julie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Okay, ouch with the pouch. Tell me what your observations are, please.
Okay, I'm in a slightly different situation to a lot of parents are going to be. I lived in the UK for about 10 years.
Yeah.
I have two children, one who is now in secondary and one who is in junior school here.
Yeah.
We moved home about a year ago.
Okay.
So in my daughter's school, when they were coming out of COVID...
Yeah.
Children were absolutely inseparable from their phones. They got so used to needing them for classes or homework notes or just keeping in contact with their friends. They felt completely and utterly lost without them.
Yeah.
So a particular teacher in my daughter's school got really, really fed up of having children with phones during his classes. So he basically built a large timber box with Perspex front. It's got slots inside that correspond to each child's allocated place in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And at the start of the class, everyone puts their phone in their allocated slot. It's there for the entirety of the class. They can see it. They know it's safe. There is no, I forgot to put it in my locker, or I don't have my bag. There was no excuses available. It goes into the box at the, I suppose, phone jail at the start of class, and they go and retrieve it at the end of class. It worked well in his class. He built one for every classroom in the school, and that's just the way it is for them now.
And they come
in the morning, they put it into the slot for the first class and take it out at the end of it.
And
go
you
to
can,
the next room, put it into their slot and continue.
And, you bring your phone with you from class to class. Of course. Okay.
It means, you know, as they're walking between one class to another, because I know in some cases there could be a 5-minute walk between the classes.
Okay. Stay with us, Julie. David, the pouches, many pupil, 400 in your school.
Ish, yeah. About 400, that, just that school there, you know, nice idea, possibly, but it has a few flaws in it because the fact that they have the phone between classes And, you know, that's when a lot of stuff happens. Like, there's an awful lot of good stuff that can be done on phones.
Here.
You know, there's an awful lot of good stuff, but unfortunately that doesn't happen. And toilets and, you know, photos and everything else that goes along with it, I'm afraid. That school's idea was, in theory, if you had perfect students, but, you know, that's not the way the world is.
And thank God. Thank God.
Yeah.
The rich tapestry and sounds of a 400 young people is a joy most times, an absolute joy.
Yeah.
But David, so at the end of, you have the pouches, at the end of the Norma Foley pouches, at the end of the day, who opens them?
Yeah, so this is the other thing, like, again, at the end of the day, there's a number of magnets around the exits. And they go and unlock their phone.
Oh, they do that themselves?
As they go. They do that themselves,
And what, so, they leave their pouch? Oh, they put their pouch in their bag?
Yeah. Yeah, bring home the pouch. And even, I suppose, then that's another, you know, that's when possibly damage can happen to the pouch then.
Yeah, and also when you hear they're all online now, apparently all the little, gently cut through the seam, put Velcro in the bottom of your pouch and as if it's closed. Yeah, well, Yonder are very good at publicity, you know that. Any new school that takes on Yonder, they're immediately up on their website and they're saying another school. 75 schools in the past 3 years. That's not many, is it? Sure isn't. And while the pouches, this is from Yonder, from out Yonder. Mm. While the pouches are very durable, they are not designed to be indestructible. For this reason, it is critical that we work closely with schools administrators to ensure the appropriate procedures are adopted and consistently applied. Yeah, but much of that caused me. But you're going
my
to continue.
My main point, Joe.
Yes,
yeah, okay. The main point I was trying to make as a person on the ground and dealing with it every
day.
And just with the budget and €9 million, they are a total waste of money.
Okay.
Because, you know, as been mentioned last week, in the last 2 weeks, anyone that can buy a phone for €500, €600, €700, and the fact that they might have a bit more respect if they had to pay the 20, whereas they haven't a notion, possibly, if they're getting it for free. And she will be paying out for every year, you know, every year, year on year. It's a total waste.
Okay.
They're not up to it. Pouch is not up to it.
Yeah, well, would you just say you can't bring your phone into school? Then what's the answer?
Yeah. Some schools are doing that, and it seems to work pretty good. That's going on as well. So I don't know how many schools are going to take up the pouch.
Yeah, but then on the one hand, then you hear that on the one hand, and then you hear the other hand, a lot of schools are using iPads.
Well, the iPad thing is kind of, I would like to get a number on that, Joe. The iPad thing died a bit, you know, there's not too many schools.
Right, tell us.
Well, the iPad, unfortunately, the iPad, again, probably, you know, it's like a phone, it's just a big phone. So,
yeah, of course, yeah, smartphone, yeah.
So, like schools, when they're at school, maybe it can be managed because the internet and Wi-Fi can be managed, but again, once they go home, but again, it's just like a phone. I'm sure there's parents ringing in, I'd love, you know, could I have a pouch at home? I have kids myself, you know, you'd love to have a pouch at home.
That's but, a good point, yeah.
Again, they get away around that too, you know. But look at,
well, try the popcorn bag trick. That's the cheapest.
Yeah.
51551 Joe at RT.ie. Jason Walsh is in. Where are you, Jason? Killarney. Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, hi, Joe. How are things?
Good time,
I'm listening to this, mildly incensed and bemused by the whole situation. I mean, have we lost sense of ourselves in this country? Are we not adults enough to tell our children that you can't bring a smartphone to phone because it's to school because it's distracting? Do we not know as adults that Facebook, whoever they are, all these other companies, the social media companies, are creating a drug, a visual drug, that is demanding the
okay,
the
you see, so you we all these arguments have been played out over the last week, but you see no and long before, you see no benefit in a smartphone for a child, no, for a teenager.
Oh, absolutely, I see complete benefits.
Okay.
But when they're at school, What do they need their social media for? What do they need their smartphone for? Why aren't we as adults saying, sorry, give me the phone, thank you. We'll see you at 4 o'clock and I'll collect it. You get your phone back.
Okay, so what do you think of the pouch? What do you think of Norma Foley's pouches?
I think it's ludicrous. I think there's €9 million could be better spent on actual meeting. So I think it's testament that we have a very immature government that they're pandering needs to teenagers. It's testament that we have a government who's more interested in social media than what actually the taxpayers are, the taxpayers' lives, etc. They're more concerned about how they look with the new generation growing up, because it does feel like that. I mean, pandering to children who want, oh, I want my mobile phone in school. I'm sorry, that's ludicrous. And you're spending 9 million euros of taxpayers' money.
And there's no exceptions. Can any, if a child has a particular medical condition, or indeed one of their parents or relatives is unwell, bring my smartphone.
Joe, when I was a child, I went to school and we lived far away. So when the exception that I got was that we were late all the time. So I used to arrive at 9:15. My parents had to write to the school. I got a card saying if I was stopped in going to school that I was allowed to be there.
What's that got to do with smartphones?
So if there's a desperate need, certainly the parents can ring the school or write to the school and say, can you make an exception for this child? Because these are the medical needs and it's backed up by this doctor's letter or whatever is required for it.
An adult
needs to make this decision. This sounds like the teenagers are making decisions for themselves here.
If a number of political parties have to weigh, the voting age is going to be reduced to 16. So if I can vote, why can't I bring a smartphone into my school?
It just backs up what I said. The politics has shifted to social media, where they're trying to grasp people earlier rather than letting them grow up as individuals and make, determined adult decisions on what they want to vote for and who they want to vote for. No, they're trying to target them while they've been on social media and teenagers in school. It's absolutely decrepit of a government to offer 9 million euros for a bag to put your mobile phone into. Absolutely decrepit. When there are people out there homeless, with everything going on in the world, that is the priority for them. I think it's ludicrous, absolutely ludicrous. There needs some adults in that government to make a decision on this for our children.
Okay.
That's what we expect. Our children do not dictate to us. We're the adults here. We tell the children how they should behave.
Jason, it's a bit of a two-way now. With 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds. It's a bit of a two-way, isn't it?
Okay, but what about a 12-year-old coming into school with a mobile phone?
Yeah, but apparently...
He's being targeted and bullied and can't get away from it. And we're allowing that. In fact, we're giving him a little sachet. Surely we need to make decisions for the best results for our children.
But it might be the one decision doesn't cover all. Stay with us, Jason. Maria.
Hi, Joe.
Yeah.
Well... The gentleman before me has more or less said everything. Mm-hmm. I applaud him. A rock of common sense is what I would say. Now, I don't have children myself, but we reared three children and two sisters and a brother from my partner's sister who died. And they all went through school they had them from 4 years of age and 15 months. So they went through primary and through secondary school with us. They're graduated now. They're all out of college. But there was never an issue. In the early days, they didn't have mobile phones. Through secondary school, they went into their locker in the morning. And there was a two-week ban if any child was caught with the phone taken out during school time.
Okay, so what do you think of the pouches?
I can't see why there's a need to have pouches. Every school building at the principal's office, the secretary's office, anywhere within the school, they have cabinets. Why can't it?
You have 400 students every morning queuing to get to a cabinet.
Well, the thing is, they could be literally...
The first class wouldn't begin until 12.
I don't think that you have to do it that way. I think children don't all clump into school and 400 of them don't arrive because I've dropped them many times. They dawdle in twos and threes and fours. There can be a drop box or a drop bench where each person puts and then there's a staff member picks up the phone, brings it to the cabinet or brings it into a room.
Who's going to pay that staff member extra for the extra work?
Well, they don't need it. It doesn't need to be extra.
There's janitors,
there's all kinds of people that are the
caretakers are the worst paid people in the school. If they're going, they're going to do it. They should be paid extra. By the way,
there's a way.
I know that.
Yeah.
Well, there's not actually because we're dealing with so many different situations. Like, do your
now one of ours had epilepsy. Yeah. So very severe epilepsy.
Okay,
so,
like, very important.
She always had her phone with her.
Yeah.
But, like the gentleman before said, by and large, we would ring. There was a procedure where if she had an episode, we were phoned by the principal or the assistant principal, and we would go in and get her, as she would be taken to a room and allowed to lie down in quietness. But she didn't have to have access to her mobile phone, but she was always allowed to have her phone, which was in her locker. Now, nearly every school, all the secondary schools, have lockers, and they bring and just put their
Have you a
phone
smartphone, Maria? Have you a smartphone?
I have.
Do you love
I
it?
I have, and I'm...
Do you love it?
I do. I'm actually completely addicted to it, so I do understand...
Don't use the word addicted, because you're assuming, as I heard someone say last week, ridiculously, smartphones are like drink or drugs. They're not. You cannot pick up a pint of Guinness. And dial 999 looking for an ambulance.
They can kind of work with your psychic algorithms. You know, they do kind of draw you. There are endorphins and different things in the brain that are
The main endorphin in the human brain that's kicked is the need to communicate and socialise with each other. Stay there, Maria. Susie Hall. Susie is a Malahide. Susie.
Hello,
Susie.
Joe. How are you?
How long were you president of the... Is this the same Susie?
Yes, it is.
President of the ASDI.
I was once, yes, in a former life. I was teaching for 41 years in the larger school in Dublin.
Right.
And when mobile phones came in, students were obliged to keep them in their lockers.
Okay.
And if they didn't do that, there was a penalty. The phones were confiscated for a given period of time. Now, this nonsense about the pouches...
Yeah.
Teachers have to stand at the door when the children are coming in and supervise them putting the phones into these pouches.
Yeah.
And the teachers nowadays are so put upon and overburdened with curriculum overload and everything else. And the idea of teachers standing there like policemen at the door, it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I would say is, there is a crying need in schools, and you've spoken about this, and well done to you, but you've spoken about the need for getting children assessed and the delays to get children assessed. Now, would the money not be better spent?
I know,
on that?
But yeah, we can come up, and it's happened from that afternoon, just come up with 150 ideas of how the 9 million
could be set.
We know all that, and we know.
Yes,
but do you not think, you're saying the teachers are mitred? Do you not think our Minister for Education is mitred in science, the Minister for Technology? Do you not think the Minister for Education is mitred by people saying, do something about the mobile phone, do something? And she's trying to do something, and she gets it in the next.
I don't know why they're saying it, because the taxpayers have already provided lockers in the schools for children to put their mobile phones into. But you were talking about the necessity for social connection.
It's called you being human.
Exactly. Now, there is less of it nowadays with young people, because instead of chatting to each other on the way up and down
well,
to school.
In fairness,
they're
Susie,
on their mobile
yeah,
phones.
Yeah, but they're chatting to each other in different ways. You know, you can't turn
well,
back the tide.
Well, at a distance. Suggesting you should. But the sort of
if we followed that argument to its logical conclusion, we never would have installed a landline in Ireland in the 1950s.
Because
wouldn't be talking to it. I know,
not at all. What I'm suggesting is that children should have a long break every day when they're off mobile phones.
Okay.
School is a great opportunity for socialisation, for exchange of ideas and learning to be socially with other people. It's a golden opportunity.
Okay.
And I see the same when I go out for a meal to a restaurant and two parents come in with two children and they're all on their mobile phones. And I have to hold myself back from saying
what
to
would
them,
you say?
These are golden. I would say to them, these are golden opportunities that you have as a family to chat to your children about their friends. They don't.
They say, one of them might say, my dad is a bore, all he does is tell dad jokes.
They might, but even that, it allows the child to express themselves. No, honestly,
I just don't know what it
grieves me when I see it.
Don't let it grieve you, Susie. It's not that
well,
bad.
Well, in the sense that I feel that people
smartphones can save our lives.
Wonderful.
Smartphones can save our lives.
Of course they can.
Do you have one?
Do you
have one?
Well, now here's the thing, Joe.
Okay. I knew I'd get caught.
I do not use a smartphone.
What are you on, a Nokia?
The phone I have is 24 years old.
Okay.
Yes. And it does all I need to send and receive messages.
Okay.
I'm a very techie person.
Yes.
I have the latest MacBook Air for my work. I need it.
Okay.
And also a latest iPad.
Wow.
Because, you know, I'm working.
But is anyone in your care or your kin or your ken, do they have smartphones?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Yes, of course. I'm not against smartphones.
Not, okay.
For goodness sakes, not at all. I'm not a Luddite, Joe, believe you me.
I know that.
But
I
made a lifestyle choice several years ago not to engage, and I bought myself years of peace. I don't get ads pinging at me and alerts and all that. It's great. It's
and you
peaceful.
Can turn all them off on your smartphone.
You can, of course you can.
Okay.
Yes, I'm not, you know, I'm not ridiculous about it. But I do just think that this is a sledgehammer cracking a nut when children should just be told you leave your mobile in your locker during the school day and that's it. And Joel, one last thing. I have to wonder at how generations upon generations of us all manage to get through the education system without mobile phones. Our parents didn't know where we were, and we learned resilience and punctuality and everything
else. In
fairness,
Susie, as we learned on this programme a month ago, for nearly 3 weeks, up to 1992, they got through school with nothing to do with you, but they got through school with a fair amount of beatings and savagery.
Well, that was shocking, Joe.
Shocking.
I taught for 41 years. I never felt the need to lay a hand on any
course,
student.
Brilliant.
And
course,
I taught co-ed. There wasn't any need. But that's a different thing.
Okay.
Those people didn't even feel they could
confide
in their parents.
The good old days that people talk about sometimes. I'm throwing out a very wide net here over this lake.
Of course.
And I'm saying the good old days that people hark for weren't always the good old days.
Oh, I could never stand over that at all.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is that the people who could not confide in their parents, and I fully understand why they could not in those days, would not have contacted them by mobile phone either.
Okay, good point.
No,
let me stay there, Susie. Brendan O'Rourke. Brendan, your point quickly, please, if you can.
Yes, Joe. I just thought maybe ban the phones completely. Don't even allow them on the school bus, I thought, you know. Keep the problem out of the school completely.
And say, God forbid, has happened this week. Thankfully, it sounded much more serious at the beginning when the first reports were coming in. That school bus in Northern Ireland that flipped over into a field. I presume a number of the students on that bus, thankfully that no one was seriously hurt, they would have used their mobile phone to ring the emergency services.
Yeah, but surely the bus driver would have a phone.
Well, hang on, you're presuming, not in that case because he did or she did, obviously. But say the bus, which just happened, say the bus driver had a heart attack. You know what I mean? There are good uses for smartphones and mobile phones. There are.
Yeah,
they far outweigh the negatives.
Yeah, well, thankfully we don't have too many bus crashes, Joe.
I know that, but you know,
for kids to carry phones. I mean, if a bus crashed in the 80s, there was no mobile phones. That's been my point. You know.
Yeah, so you'd ban them. You'd ban them what? Completely, totally, absolutely.
If parents and kids and teachers and government were on board from day one in first year and they knew there was no phone allowed, I mean, if the phone's going to be in the locker all day, what's the phone doing in the school anyway?
Okay. You know, I don't know whether, have you, in the sense of you, anyone in your remit who has a smartphone, would you limit it at home?
Yes, of course, Joe, yes.
In what way?
Well, you give them the hour or whatever, half hour, whatever it is.
Well, they don't try and circumvent.
Well, everyone tries to break the rule, but if there's a rule there. I mean, we introduce a smoking ban.
That's the state. What do you do in your family home if one of your children breaks the rule? How do you enforce it? Is there a sanction?
Well, Well, I mean, I think they don't. You know, if you have a rule and everyone understands it, I mean, okay, you might go a little bit astray, but I think letting the phone out the door and into the school bus and into the school and then putting into a locker, the problem is in the school already, and then there's always going to be 10 or 500 that will try and exploit that.
Yeah.
So if you can keep the problem from the school, you're creating a problem for teachers, as the lady said before, that is overworked already, you know.
That's unfortunate. Okay, Brandon, I'm
going to maybe 50 or maybe, you know, if those, at least that at that stage they're doing the leaving and it's up to themselves whether they fail or pass or leaving at that stage. Leaving 30 or maybe.
Maybe, okay. You see, Brandon, you're wilting. You're wilting, sorry. You're on the slippery slope there. You're now saying, maybe leaving, sir. You're slipping there, Brandon. Okay, good suggestions. Willie to finish. Willie.
Joe, Willie from Watford.
Long time no hair. Are you keeping? You're looking well.
I'm on holidays, I would have been a lot or something. Yeah, but anyway,
you're looking well, Willie. How did you see? You have to get your hair done. You look fantastic.
I don't know, Joe. Good night's sleep, Joe, and a few exercises. Yeah, and keep on top of things as opposed to keep
good
you young,
man.
Joe.
Good man. And you're good over, Joe, you're over the other, are you, Willie? You're over the other.
I got over the hill, Joe. I'm back over it again.
Okay, Willie, your suggestion here, I'm sitting here with my breath is bated.
Joe, you have to go back to the future, right? Think about this one. 1970, you used to go up to Jury's Hotel on the hill, which is the odd read at the time, right?
Looking down on Warford.
You go up to the disco, Joe.
Yeah.
You hand your coat in. Yeah. The lady gives you a ticket. Yeah. Two of them in the counter.
Yeah.
And the ticket is 25, we say.
Yeah.
Come back. You hand a ticket in, and here's a copy of that on your code, and you get your code back.
That
will be the same thing to do with the phones in the schools. Have two pupils there every morning, taking them in, and two will do it one morning, two will do it the next morning. Simple operation, Joe.
And the cloakroom in ballrooms or dance halls, you had to pay, didn't you?
50p, Joe, to get your code home.
That's 50p.
That wasn't a bad bargain, Joe.
That's 250 a week for every child in the country to pay in.
Yeah, and then if you came over, if you got a girl in the dance hall to be home, it'll cost you 50p extra, so you have to get whole court as well, Joe.
And then you'd spend the rest of the evening trying to get the coat off her. David.
It'd be too cold, Joe. I'd be walking to get a taxi home.
With the breeze coming up the river there and whatever. David.
Yeah,
are we any? Willie, look after yourself. Will you keep in touch, Willie? Don't be a stranger. David, are you any the wiser?
Not really. Willie, there, you know, what do you do with the lad that says, I have no coat?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's gone. And the main reason though I was talking was about the waste of money. We've wasted a lot of money in Ireland over the years, and she's going to waste more, the government, if they buy these pouches. And
do I have to, by the way, you know these smart watches now, you can talk into them and they tell you. Do you have to put them in the pouch in your school?
Yeah. Well, they're sort of banned, but any lad that has the watch has to go as well if he's found with the watch.
Okay.
Yeah, and as I said at the beginning too, there's an awful lot of good stuff, educational stuff on the phone. But it's the other stuff, Joe. And the pouch isn't going to help us. The pouch is not going to help the situation, and it's too expensive.
Okay.
Yeah.
David, well, I meant to say to Susie. Susie gone. Susie, 41 years Susie was a teacher. Come on, that's brilliant. That's brilliant, Susie. And thank you as well, David, and good luck to all our great, great teachers, primary, second, third level. Okay, good Emil, good and special. David, good Emil, I'm all good. Joe at rt.ie5, but don't throw away your smartphone. Put my number on your phone. 0818-715-815. Just put it in there and as one of your favourites.
Talk to Joe on 0818-715-815. Talk to Joe on 0818-715-815.
Peter, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. I'm not good having read what you're going through. And I'm so sorry to hear about this, Peter. When did you first realise you might be in trouble?
So this all started when I came back from a little trip from to South Africa.
Okay.
I was doing a bit of volunteering work out there.
Right.
In September of 22.
Okay.
And I had a few problems passing water, but when I came home with a bad chest infection. So off to the doctor, and he said to me, he says, oh, by the way, Peter, you haven't given any blood for 18 months. I said, well, take them now. So they did the PSA test.
Prostate-specific antigen.
And it came back. He came back the first time they hadn't done the test, so I had to go and do it again.
Okay.
And I was at work. Mm-hmm. I was after changing jobs as well that year. I was at work, and the phone rings. It's my doctor, and it says, Peter, your bloods came back, and I want to see you this week.
Okay.
I said, okay, what's the problem? Oh, yeah. Your PSA is a bit high. I went, all right. I says, you're booked in for Thursday. So up to see him, and went through all the rigmarole. He gave me a quick examination. He says, Jerry, your PSI is too high, Peter. I said, how high, Jerry? He said, oh, it's just too high. He said, tell me how high is it? 107, he says. I went, how high, what should be? 4. I went, oops,
wow.
That's not good. So it's not. So he put me on a tablet for a condition that he might have thought I had. It brought it down to 74.
Okay.
And he rang me. He says, no, you're going to the Rapid Access Clinic in Cork. I says, great. Off I went. So they went to stay seeing me in November. I went to see down to them, and I had a couple of exams there. I had the digital exam by the main guy, and I hadn't even got my trousers up around my waist when he said, you've got prostate cancer.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Though it is, yeah. Let's go on the journey.
It goes from there. So,
yeah.
So it says, well, I'm going to book you for this, that, and the other. So in early December, just after my birth, I had an MRI, and I started the year off on the 2nd of January 23 with a biopsy.
Okay.
And the biopsy came back with a Gleason score of what they call 3+5, which is 8.
Mm-hmm.
And a further meeting with the consultants there, and he said, yes, you've got stage three cancer.
Okay.
High risk cancer, prostate cancer. And he said, but our aim, he says, is to cure you. Now, he said his aim was to cure me. He said, great, marvelous, brilliant. Let's go and do what we have to go and do.
Yeah.
So all the scans, the biopsies and the MRIs and this scan and that scan, blood tests here and blood tests there. And I started in with hormone therapy, which is to get rid of the hormones in the body, not to give me hormones. So that's been going on since January as well. But I had to go and have radiation. So I had 25 or 28 sessions of radiation. Every day of the week for 7.5 weeks. And I was in and out of hospital every day, bar the weekends.
Wow.
And it worked because it brought it down. It brought my PSA down from what it was, 74 to 0.29, which was brilliant. And that was my lowest, and that's grand. And they had me on these tablets. I started on, I think it was abiraterone, and I had to give that up because it was doing my liver in. And then the PSA starts to rise again. And it rose to 5, just over 5 on the 16th of November. It then shot up again in, it went up to 100 and something in December. Okay. And that's when they did another PSMA scan. They found it gone into my lung. Quite unusual, he said. Very, very unusual for it to go onto your lung. Normally goes into the bones first. So it's very, very unusual. So after that, The tablets weren't working, so they said, we're going to have to go on to chemo. Mm. So I started on chemo in, when was chemo? It was March.
Okay.
Of this year. And I went 5 or 6 sessions of docetaxel, and that stopped working. And my PSA has gone up to 261. So I'm now on a different. I'm on cabazitaxel, it's called, and I've had a bit of a blurp in between that. I had my gallbladder out, nothing to do with the cancer or anything, just one of these things. But because I had a 7-week break now, my PSA I think was up over the 300 mark, 367. So I'm on palliative care at the moment.
Okay.
If I was to stop every bit of treatment, any of the drugs, any of the chemotherapy. And I did ask my radiologist, this is what's the outcome? He says between 6 and 8 months.
Oh, God.
So, that's pretty cut and dry, like.
Yeah.
And it's, do you know what? I'm going to say, and you might sound this for amused with now at this stage, Joe, because I try and get all the information I can about all of these things. And the more information I get, the more I can process it. And the more you can process it, the more you can understand it. Yeah. I find the less I know, the more you're in the dark, the more fearful you become.
Yeah, okay.
And if you don't have fear, you can go along with all these things, and you can go, right, this is it, and this is what they're doing. You know what they're doing. Marvellous. When it comes to what I'm on at the moment, this is after cabazitaxel. There's only one other treatment, as far as the oncologist said, and it's a thing called Pluvicto. That's the brand name. Basically, what it is, let me just bring it up here. What it is, it's a radio type therapy. And it's a medicine used to treat cancer of the prostate that has metastasized, which means it's gone not just into the prostate, but it's gone into the bone, it's gone into the lymph nodes, it's gone anywhere else in the body. So mine's in the lymph nodes, and now it's in the lung as well. It's also now gone into the bones, which is, you know, it's starting to progress even more so. So what it does, it attaches a hormone to the PSMA antigen that's in the cancer, and only to the prostate where the body has prostate cancer, and it kills the cells there. And that's all it does. It doesn't affect any other part of the body.
So this is hope for you, but is it available?
If I had 120,000 euros in my pocket, yes.
Where is it available?
Well, I know that in the matter private, they did have three people who got treated, but on grounds of compassionate grounds from Novartis. Novartis are the people who do this drug. Yeah. Now, I have been in contact with Dr. O'Connell. He's the cardio consultant radiologist specialist in nuclear medicine, and he's in the matter, right? And he's told me this right now. There's no government-funded, or to my knowledge, insurer-funded access to Pluvicto. Some insurance companies did cover it until this summer, and they've been talking to the insurers about this and the NCCP for the last 4 years. I think every oncologist, radiation oncologist, will tell you that this is the way forward. This is the last step for me. After this, I've nothing left. This will give me hopefully another...
So how can you get it?
You see, again, the government have not, and the HC have not. Normally, with all these drugs, they're funded by the government. There's the NCCP.
Well, I presume Pluvicto has been rejected by the National Centre for Pharma Economics.
Well, the efficacy part is not right, because it is approved in Germany, it's approved in Belgium, it's approved in England, it's approved in Australia, it's approved in England, and it's FDA approved across the world. So the efficacy is not a problem here. Well, they're going on the fact that it's too dear.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They say cost, investment, return, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, when we talk about investment costs, okay.
How are you in all of this? This is just one knock after the other.
As my oncologist said, you haven't received a break yet on this. No, this is, and I'm only not even two. I'm 2 years into this month. I'm only 60. I'll be 62 in December. I'm getting on with it. I've no other choice. I just have to get on with life and try to do the best I can. But the HSC and the NCPA, they've rejected on some grounds. One of them is they've said that, I've written it down here, that a medicine that they can, where did I put this now?
Take your time. God, this is a very difficult story to hear. Now, stay there. It's a difficult story to hear, but a very difficult story. Yeah. You're living through it. Stay there and gather your bits of paper, and I'll come back to you after this break.
I have it here, actually.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Peter's contacted us. Unfortunately, he's going through a journey with aggressive prostate cancer. Your reason in contacting us, Peter, is it to try and get treatment abroad? Is it to try and appeal to Novartis? What is it? What do you hope for at best?
I want the HSC because what they
You want the HSC what?
To get this treatment reimbursed on their system, so I can get it here, or I can go abroad and get it. They've had a recommendation, and it's only a recommendation, Joe, from the NCEP not to reimburse this. Now, a recommendation is a recommendation.
Well, it is a national. They've over the years, and it's been quite controversial at times, and they have changed their mind at times as well.
Yes, they can change their minds, Joe. They can. So what they
and if you got a hard question, sorry about Peter. Yeah. You're asking all the hard questions, and you're answering a lot of them. Unfortunately, insofar as they can be answered, if you got this Pluvicto,
yeah.
What would it give you?
Give me an extra 15 to 18 months of life.
Okay.
No, basically that's it. You know, I could have no treatment, or could have I finish with capacity. Once I finish with what I'm on at the moment, Joe, unless I get this Pluvicto, I've nothing left. There's nothing out there.
Oh,
as I said to you, the HSC considers a number of factors along with the recommendation we're dealing with whether to decide to provide this medicine or not. And one of them is the clinical opinion to the review group that suggests that radium-223 is a relevant comparator in the subpopulation of patients with symbiotic bone metastasis and no extensive variceal metastasis. That's what they say in the report. That's great if I only had bone metastasis. That's what radium-223 is for. I have visceral metastasis.
Yeah, much more, okay.
I've got the whole lot going on. So okay.
Before the break, I want to try and inject some pardon, I want to bring in John Wall, who's been holding on. Stay with us now, Peter. John Wall is an N. John. Yeah. Talk to Peter.
Sure. Good afternoon. Peter, how are you doing? Listen, your story when I heard it resonated very much with me.
Yep.
Once upon a time, I was told, I was diagnosed with stage 4 prostate that had spread to the lymph nodes several years ago. And I was told that, get my affairs in order, etc. And I didn't. Instead, I had the chemotherapy at home, went abroad, had life-saving surgery in Belgium. Routine surgery just wasn't available in Ireland, and followed by radiation treatment. And 5 years of hormone treatment. And I suppose what I wanted to say is never give up hope, because I too was in your position once upon a time. And incidentally, I was actually in Novartis by pure coincidence about a month ago giving a talk on prostate cancer. And senior management there were telling me of the importance of Pluvicto and what it can actually do, and if I had any connections whatsoever to try and expand the conversation and those that could approve it for use on men with prostate cancer, the HSC in particular, is to have that conversation again, because it's something that actually works. And what costs do you put on life? That's my point, I guess.
But can I just interject here in one simple statement, that earlier on in the programme, there was a talk about phone covers and $9 million were going to be spent on phone covers. According to Dr. O'Connell, 70 patients this year, as a minimum, will require Pluvicto. $9 million would cover the cost for 75 patients, John. A year.
That's potentially, 70, 80, 90 lives. And families.
Yes.
And John, have you a message of hope for Peter? He is trying. He is doing his best to try and get this drug. But remember, the National Centre for Pharma Economics, they are, their word is gospel.
The word is gospel, and Pembroke once upon a time as well.
That's true.
And look what happened.
It's a recommendation, Joe. It's a recommendation. Okay. It's not, you must do this. We're recommending that you do not fund.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that you have to take the recommendation.
Okay, stay with us till after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Peter, as well as campaigning, you're going through this. Is there any comfort for you at the minute? What?
If I can get the message out as well to every man out there over the age of, say, 45.
Oh, yeah, get it done,
Get their PSA checked. If you have any problem with your waterworks, get it checked.
Yeah. And your day-to-day, and we keep saying to people, but your day-to-day life at the minute?
Day-to-day life is grand. I have a great circle of friends. I have a great wife, two boys here. One's away in Waterford working. He lives in Waterford. Another fellow's upstairs who works from home. We have a little dog. We have a great social life, lovely neighbours. I couldn't ask to be in a better place, John.
Okay.
I'm glad we moved down here to Shannongarry, and it's just beautiful. There's just one little thing I need just
briefly,
The National Cancer Registry between 2012, and I'll just say the importance of radiotherapy. The proportion of prostate cancer patients receiving tumour-directed treatment has remained fairly constant, but the use of radiotherapy has increased markedly from 11% in patients from 1994 to 2000 to 43% of patients.
Okay.
Surgery has declined from 50% to 27%.
Wow.
And that's for 3,364 of those people, we'd be 2.5% of people. 2.5% of those people need Pluvicto. 100 people a year.
Pluvicto. Okay. Peter, an awful lot of
There's an awful lot of information.
And we'll get it up on our podcast and that, but an awful lot of support for you and empathy and compassion. But that doesn't butter any parsnips at the minute, and it's all very, very well-meaning and received. But Pluvicto seems to be the answer in your case. Thanks indeed, Peter. Thanks, John. Thanks to all our callers. Back on Monday, Mark McGrath, sound broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin, series producer Annette Egan. Ray Darcy is next. If we're in the Clonmel area this weekend, will you make sure you get all the details about the wonderful festival that's on there in memory of the great, great friend of mine and a great, great poet, the late Dennis O'Driscoll. If you're in and around Clonmel, well worth, and most of the events are free. Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover our new autumn collection with fresh designs and cosy colours. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.